This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. Good afternoon. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Miriam Sobe in for Chris Kreidel. Our AccuWeather forecast for this afternoon, sunshine mixing with clouds. It'll be hot, high near 90 degrees. Increasing clouds tonight, warm and more humid. A little shower possible later on, low of 72. And tomorrow, mostly cloudy, not as hot, but it will be humid. A couple of showers and a thunderstorm around, especially later on in the day, high of 80 degrees. 83 right now at O'Hare. It's 85 at Midway, 82 at the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, we are headed higher with the Dow up 117 points or 0.5%, back above 25,300. NASDAQ is advancing 50 points or 0.2%, S&P gaining 18, also good for a gain of 0.2%. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is outperforming the larger indices. It is up 0.8%. Some credit for the gains is going to Home Depot, which some investors see as an economic indicator. Its sales in recent months jumped the most in three years as homeowners tackled improvements following a long winter. Now, the report, while it's good for Wall Street, doesn't seem to be helping Home Depot stock. It's lower by about 0.5%. An actual economic report shows U.S. farm exports hit by the trade war with China in July. China slapped 25% tariffs on American soybeans and targeted other farm goods in retaliation for U.S. trade duties. Soybean prices plunged. Overall, farm export prices fell the most in 6 years. Crude oil futures little change near $67.17. Gold was higher, now lower, and still below $1,200 an ounce. Back to you, Cisco and Miriam.
Thanks, Elisa. Coming up on today's Noon Business Hour, Dick Beauvais will join us. He doesn't think the Fed's going to raise rates as quickly as has been presumed. Also, we'll talk about Uber and Lyft under fire by a couple of Chicago aldermen.
And it's Travel Tuesday just as kids are getting back to school. You might want to take a possible education vacation at a few missed days. Plus, we're in a bullish market, but an investment columnist likes to take the opposite route. We'll hear from him and why he doesn't like to run with the herd.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A battle is expected in the Chicago City Council over stricter laws involving rideshare services such as Lyft and Uber. We'll talk about that in our next segment. Right now, a respected bank analyst is not going with the crowd over projected interest rate increases. We welcome him to the show, Dick Beauvais, chief strategist at Rafferty Holdings in New York. So, Dick, before we ask you why you believe it, what do you think the Fed is going to do on interest rates?
Well, I think that if it goes as planned, you'd see an increase in September and then again in December, and possibly three more increases in 2019. But I don't think that events will go as planned. I think that should the Fed take those actions, I would mean that by the end of 2019, that they would have increased interest rates by 12 times. And if you take a look at money supply, you will note that money supply has not grown at all over the last 4 months. It's actually the same today as it was 4 months ago. So, you know, I cannot see the Fed, you know, implementing a tightness of that nature on this economy, because it hasn't been established yet that this economy is going to grow at 3 to 4%, we'll say, for the next year or two.
Since the Fed has essentially telegraphed that, could that send a negative sign to Wall Street if we don't get the rate hikes that are expected?
Well, if one looks at classical economics, why would anybody want higher interest rates if they own financial assets? Higher interest rates have only one impact on financial assets, you know, from a scholarly or an academic standpoint. They lower the value of financial assets. You know, Wall Street only deals in financial assets. So it's hard to imagine that the market would be terribly upset if all of a sudden the Fed chose not to increase interest rates. But, you know, the president has a big stake here, and his Treasury Secretary and the head of the National Economic Council have both indicated that he does not want to see interest rates go higher. And he has an enormous amount of, if you will, power at this time over the Fed. There are only three people on the Fed board, which is supposed to be composed of seven. Two of the three have their jobs because the president nominated them. Two more people are being reviewed by the Senate at the present time who have been nominated by the president for, you know, the Fed board. And then there's two more that come after that. It is entirely possible that by the end of this year, six of the seven Fed board members will have been put in place by the president. And I would argue that the head of the New York Fed District Bank was put in place by the president. So the net effect is, it's hard to imagine that these people who owe their jobs, if you will, to the president are going to turn around and say to the president, I know what you want, but we're just not going to do it.
So, Dick, how much the household debt that we are seeing now, that we are down in 16 years, households are in the best position to handle it. What is the main factor for that?
Well, I mean, you know, the reason why household debt is more under control is because of the financial crisis, number one, which restricted lending, you know, in a number of different fashions. We'll take one easy one, which is housing. The CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Board, you know, put in place, you know, a series of rules which almost made it impossible for the traditional banking industry to lend money to first-time homebuyers. So the net effect is it's rules like this that impact leverage lending, you know, impact the way the banks, you know, can deal with, you know, secondary market activity, which has forced, you know, most of the lending to go outside of the banking industry, to, you know, if you will, subprime lenders. I mean, the Wall Street Journal did a major article today indicating, you know, the surge in credit cards being provided to people who are in subprime categories. I mean, there is a huge amount of money which is now floating into private equity, which is not occurring. In other words, historically, this would be, you know, companies that come to market with new technologies, new ideas. Instead, you know, they're going to private equity. There are a number of companies which are $1 billion in market cap or more, which the word market cap is a misnomer because they're private, but have a private value in excess of $1 billion. So, you know, the system has been adjusted meaningfully as a result of what's happened with interest rates and bank regulation and control of money supply. And I just don't believe that this president wants to see it adjusted meaningfully going forward without interest rates staying where they are.
Thank you so much. That's Dick Beauvais, Chief Strategist, Rafferty Holdings. Up next, New York City passes a tough new law involving rideshare services. Now the debate is coming to Chicago.
Discussing your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
New York has adopted tough new laws involving rideshare companies and is moving toward a minimum wage for drivers. And Chicago could be the next battleground. We're joined to talk about it by Greg Hines, columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. Greg, kind of bring us up to date on what New York's doing and what Chicago may do.
Well, there's an awful lot of similarities here. Anybody that walks around downtown Chicago or one of the neighborhoods knows that the world has changed. There are fewer traditional cabs than there used to be, and there's more Lyfts and Ubers and so forth. And in New York, which is more dense, particularly in Manhattan, it's reached what some people argue is kind of a crisis point where there's so many more cars on the street. Traditional cabbies have lost so much business, there actually were a few suicides out there recently, which prompted this new legislation to cap the number of Ubers and Lyfts for a while and work to impose a minimum wage. That all works to the advantage of traditional cab companies. But Lyft and Uber say this is really not fair to them. But they're serving their areas of the city, including here in Chicago, out in minority areas in particular, where there weren't a lot of cabs. And they're just trying to give little folks who want to make some extra money on the side the opportunity to do so. Who's right? Kind of the guys. I think it kind of depends on whose ox is being gored. It's somewhere in the middle.
So you got a couple of aldermen now in Chicago kind of saying they want to at least explore something similar. What's the political pressure here? Is it the cabbies who are losing business, as you say?
That's certainly some of the pressures coming from them, and both of the aldermen, Ed Burke and Tony Beale, have been close to the cab drivers through the years. There's some big, heavy, talented lobbyists on both sides here. Former head of intergovernmental relations for Chicago, Mike Casper, who's Mayor Emanuel's election lawyer, is representing one of the rideshare companies. And they say they're going to fight this. It's unfair that, hey, competition is competition. If we have a better product, let people use it.
Mayor Emanuel's brother has a stake in Uber. Could that be possibly something that would prevent city council from being able to push through any laws?
Well, the mayor's position on this has kind of tilted in favor of the new rideshare companies. He made some remarks yesterday in his office, released a statement pretty much suggesting that competition is good for the soul and we ought not to interfere here. Now, whether you want to connect that to his brother investment in Uber depends on how much of a conspiracy theorist you want to be. Certainly the mayor seems to be tilting in one way, and it's not the way that Burke and Beale are tilting.
Would this affect any of the cabs that also drive as Uber drivers as well? On this, you know, they do a little bit of both.
It's all mixed up together. The people who've really taken it in the air here are people who thought the cab business would be a great way to make a buck and raise a family and whatever. And there's a lot of people like that, including a lot of immigrants in this city. So they plunked down the money and they bought a medallion, or they rent a medallion. Well, those people, their investment now is only worth a fraction of what they put down before. They don't like all the competition, and they say, hey, this isn't fair to us. You change the rules.
Thanks for being here. As always, Greg Hines, columnist, Crane's Chicago Business. Ahead, Travel Tuesday, a discussion on having kids miss school so they can take a trip. WBBM News Time, 12:25, a check of the markets from Bloomberg, sponsored by Kaler Luggage. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, the Dow now higher by 119 points, or 0.5%, so we're holding just above 25,300. NASDAQ gaining 46, or a little more than 0.5%. S&P up 18, or 0.2%. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg higher by 0.75%. Wall Street says Ford Motor must cut its dividend, but the automaker says that's nonsense. Analysts at Morgan Stanley say Ford can no longer afford to pay the 15-cent dividend. It's the most generous among its automotive peers as earnings evaporate overseas and the company initiates an $11 billion restructuring. But Ford's chief financial officer says the carmaker has enough cash to cover the dividend, even in a downturn. We have a crude oil futures headed slightly higher to $67.31. And to check out the grains, we turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We have higher grain prices across the board. Corn at the moment up 5 in December at 375 and a half, just 3/4 off its high. Beans have been up 10 to 11, to down a couple right now. November beans are up 9 1/4 at 878, and wheat 538 and a half, up 5. That's 6 off its high and 6 off its low. Higher prices across the board on grains. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities and Normal. You can reach us at 800-779-1515.
Thanks, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Miriam Sobin for Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are gaining ground today. We'll see what's propelling the markets.
Some traders like to zig when everyone else zags. We'll explore the contrarian view.
It's Travel Tuesday. This afternoon, we look at things you should consider before taking kids out of school to go on a trip.
A Chicago lawyer is dead after being shot during a domestic incident on the North Shore.
President Trump takes legal action action against former aide Omarosa Manigault Newman, claiming she breached a secrecy agreement.
WBBM Business, the Dow is up 116 points, NASDAQ up 44, S&P up 17.
Sunshine in Chicagoland, getting cloudier, but AccuWeather says we will see the sun throughout the day. High of 90 degrees, right now it's 85. The noon business hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. As we just mentioned, the markets are higher today. To talk about that and more, Michael Palumbo is joining us, manager of the TMT Perseverance Fund, author of the book Calculated Risk, based here in Chicago. All right, Mike, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Well, good afternoon, Cisco and Miriam. Thanks for having me on. You know, we have a good rally in place today. The market's kind of been treading water over the last few days with some tensions overseas, especially in Turkey. But today we're up. We've got some good earnings announcements that are kind of helping to this rally to continue now. And overall, things are looking pretty good.
Are you seeing a lot of bullish investors still on Wall Street? Is that the camp that you're in overall over maybe the rest of the year or so? How you feeling?
Well, I've said this really for the last couple years, especially as this year began. I think more than ever, it's very important to be well diversified, because right now the stock market is at a very pricey level, but it also can continue to be at this level. I think you want to be participating, but I think you have to have some bets in things like bonds and gold as a hedge. I think a well-diversified portfolio where you're not just buying all the momentum names that just happen to be going up this year would be prudent at this point.
Now, Mike, we've seen Home Depot come out with their earnings, and it was higher than expected, but their stock was slightly down. What's going on?
You know what? It's a great example of an incredibly good company that is executing perfectly, but the valuation is just ahead of where the stock maybe should be. So you have Home Depot come in with 305 earnings, and which is a beat of over 20 cents on the consensus. Also, sales were $30.5 billion, which is a slight beat. And then they also raised their guidance. So they did all the things. They checked all the boxes that analysts love to see. But the stock is trading at 20 times earnings. So, you know, how much higher can it go based on the current numbers? I mean, they raised their guidance to 942 earnings for the year. But again, the stock's trading 190 or so dollars, and that means that it's still 20 plus times earnings. So if you wanted to own Home Depot, unfortunately last year was the year to own it. This year it's flat, and that's because last year was up almost 50%. So, you know, timing's everything. That was the time to own it. Right now it looks like relatively dead money, at least for the short term, just because the valuation is pretty high.
When you see something like this with Home Depot, these kind of earnings, does that say anything at all about the wider market and maybe the way things may be going in some other sectors?
Well, the market as a whole, as we've said in past shows and again today, the market as a whole is pricey. But, you know, you also look at the other and possible investments like bonds. Bonds are yielding less than 3% the 10-year. So the alternative investments to the stock market are not exactly pretty themselves. So you've got, you know, the various choices are all pretty comparable right now. So I think the stock market is fairly priced. I wouldn't say it's fairly priced because of the fact that we're in odd times where interest rates are so low. If this was a normal situation with rates at 4 or 5%, then the market would be too high. But I think you can make a case for the valuations being this high, given the fact that the bond market is yielding such a low yield. There's a big correlation between the two. So, you know, that's why I say again, be diversified. Don't have everything in the high flying stocks like Apple, even though it has done fantastic. But you know, you need some defensive names, some value names, and then I would also say own some bonds, because it's really hard to predict what's going to be going on in the next 6 to 12 months.
Moving on to cryptocurrency, it seems every time Bitcoin kind of drops a little bit below its high price, everyone wishes they jumped on. Are we going to see anything like that coming up?
Well, to quote a famous actor, Mr. T, I predict more pain coming in the near future for cryptos. And I think that the problem is, and this happens in so many areas, especially in technology, is that the insiders, the ones that's the early adopters, they all made their money. So the people that bought, you know, Bitcoin at $100, at $50, at $300, it was $500 a year ago, okay, or a year and a half ago. So the fact that it's now 6,000, down from almost 20,000, you know, that is just a short-term view of when public investors were allowed in. So unfortunately, all the public investors that got in late, they're all underwater now. So this is probably a healthy situation where, and this happens a lot, all the cryptocurrencies, you talk about Ripple, Ether, all of them are in the same boat. If you bought 2 years ago, which almost no one did because you really almost had to be an insider to do it, those investments have gone up times 10, times 20, times 30. But if you look at the last 6 months, yes, they're all down. And I think until we get more of the weaker people, and I just say the people that got in at the end, I think we need to have those people out of the market, at least a little bit of a flush here, and that's what's happening, for us to then move higher if crypto really is all that it's cut out to be. And that's going to be determined over the next 3 to 5 years. But I do think in the next 6 months, you're going to see more weakness. There's just too many weak hands that are still holding these cryptos.
Thanks so much for the analysis. Always appreciate you joining us. Michael Palumbo, manager of the TMT Perseverance Fund. Up next, Travel Tuesday, taking kids out of school for a family vacation.
Money Talks, as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday here on the Noon Business Hour. Taking kids out of school for a vacation can be rewarding, certainly in terms of family bonding, but there are some other things to consider. To talk about it, we welcome back to the show Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief of TravelingMom.com. Cindy, a lot of people do this. They take advantage of when everyone else is in school to take a trip?
Well, sure. You know, there's smaller crowds. There's better deals. You know, there's a reason people want to travel when the kids are in school.
But it's not necessarily that simple, right? Especially, well, let's start with the school angle on this. If they're not in school, they're not learning, they're getting backed up on homework. It seems like that could be a challenge.
Well, I think the first thing I always say to parents when they want to take their kids out of school is consider your kid, right? If your kid's struggling in school, then they're better off if they're in class. But, you know, my kids were A students and they were, you know, they were easily able to make up any work that they missed. So for my kids, it wasn't a problem. You know your kids best and you don't want to, you know, family bonding at the risk of hurting your child and their education probably isn't a good idea.
Are there better times than others to take kids out of school for vacation, for example, fall versus spring?
Well, I always, anytime the kids are in school, you're going to get a great deal on travel. That's just a given. But I always want to consider what's going on in school, right? You don't want the kids to miss like the first week of school because that's when the whole class is, you know, bonding and figuring out, kids are figuring out their places. You're figuring out who your friend's going to be for the year. So you don't really want them to miss that first week because it's hard on the kids. And I always talk to my kids' teachers at the beginning of the school year to sort of get a lay of the schedule, what they're expecting. So if there were big, you know, if it was like, when were they going to do midterms or when were they going to do standardized testing, things like that, so that you didn't trip up your kids accidentally by planning the big vacation at a time when they should have been in the review classes for midterms.
And what are your tips for parents who, might feel a little guilty taking their kids out of school but want to make sure it's educational while they're on vacation?
Don't feel guilty about taking your kids out of school. Don't ever feel guilty about that. I am such a huge believer in travel and its ability to open hearts and minds and its inherent ability to educate your kids. I mean, there's some legitimate educational trips you can take, right? I had a daughter who never liked history. And when she was 12, I took her to Colonial Williamsburg. She fell in love with it, ended up even becoming a history major in college, and she now works at the Detroit History Museum. So it can change your kid's life, right? Never feel guilty about it from a family bonding perspective, any of that kind of stuff, but just make sure that it actually works for the kid, right? That you're not going to hurt your kids. For example, do it when they're young, and they're not going to miss that much in school. Because by the time they hit high school and they're in AP classes and all that kind of stuff, they really do fall behind if they miss a day of school.
Yeah, maybe younger is better. Thanks, Cindy. Always appreciate you being with us. Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief of TravelingMom.com. This time tomorrow, Personal Finance Wednesday. Still to come, a contrarian take on financial markets.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Not everyone likes to run with the bulls or sleep with the bears. Let's talk about taking an opposing position. Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington, D.C. Mark, a lot of bulls out there. A lot of people think that this market still has quite a ways to go. You, as the contrarian, probably not so sure.
Well, that's right. See, what a contrarian does, as you know, but I'll just quickly review, looks at the sentiment among market participants, and on the theory that when there's an extreme amount of opinion in one direction, the market tends to go in the other way. And there's a lot of evidence that that indeed holds true. However, the one additional qualification that's important to keep in mind is that some of the sentiment indicators have significance over the very long term, and others have very short-term trading significance. And the piece of data that you referred to in your intro there has to do with the amount of household allocation to equities. I'll explain what that means. But basically, if you look at every household in the country and on average how much of their assets, their financial assets, are in stocks, it's close to an all-time high. That is a big worry. However, that's a worry over the long term. It's remained at very high levels now for several years, and as you know, the market has done well. So even though it is not a huge short-term worry, I will say that the fact that the stock market is the recipient of most of the vast majority of our financial assets collectively in this country is a source of some concern. Now, that's the bad news, but it's bad long-term news. The short-term news is somewhat better. Some of the sentiment indicators that we track, which have very short-term significance, suggest that there is there's a lot of skepticism out there, which is surprising given that there's also this long-term bullishness. But what we find is that whenever the market takes even the smallest hiccup, starts running south, there are a lot of people out there who quickly build up cash. So it suggests that there may be a lot of bullishness out there, but as they often will say, it's a mile wide but only an inch deep. And so it's something to be aware of, that I don't see the signs of excessive bullishness that would say the market has to go down tomorrow. But the long term, it's still a big question mark.
Thank you so much for the great insight. That's Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55, wrapping up the Noon Business Hour with a check of the markets, sponsored by Kaler Luggage at Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, we are holding here with solid gains. The Dow up 117 points, NASDAQ advancing 49 or 0.2%, and the S&P up 18. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is also higher by 0.2%. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has come down against United Airlines in a case of revenge porn involving a pilot and a flight attendant. The EEOC says United created a hostile work environment by failing to take action in the case. Now, that flight attendant had complained to her employer about a pilot also employed by United for posting online sexually explicit photos of her. That pilot eventually pleaded guilty to internet stalking and is serving a 41-month prison term, but it was not until he was charged that United terminated his employment. No impact on the stock. United shares are higher by almost 1%, close to $82. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.